I've been a primary author of two of the largest tax cuts in the history of our state.
Let the eagle soar.
Son, go outside and dust yourself off. And when you feel good again, come back in and talk to me. We know what they would have done because we know what they did.
K-Ro. I've been there. K-Ro.
We are going to fight for Missouri values. We are going to defend life. And we are going to protect our constitutional rights.
What I am trying to do to simply make tomorrow just a little bit better than today.
Welcome to the Hashtag MoLed Podcast. I always like to hear former Senator, I guess U.S. Attorney General Ashcroft sing the eagle soar during the lead-in. We are here with a person that has heard Let the Eagle Soar in person many times, James Harris. Welcome to the podcast.
Great to be back. Thank you.
We are joined this week again by Rachel Herndon.
Hi.
Come back in. She has on the hat. We have to put this on the internet. The Dunn Wood Products hat from Ironton, Missouri is outstanding.
Thank you. If I'm wearing it, you know I'm having a bad hair day.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that hat would make... You'd have to have an awful good hair day.
I think it's technically Missouri.
Yeah, you'd have to have an awful good hair day for that hat not to be in room. And we have a podcast executive producer, Ben Peters. Good to see you, sir.
Good to be here.
Let's jump right in. I want to ask you, like, the tough questions first. What did you do for the eclipse?
Went over to my daughter's school and met my wife. She was taking the preschoolers inside for a moment so they wouldn't look too quick. They're having a hard time finding the eclipse, you know, with the preschool. They're moving so fast.
If you want to know why you should hire James Harris, your political consultant, you should see his wife. Beautiful, smart, intelligent. Fun to be around, and James got her to marry him. So I think that should be, if you're doing a website, I think family photos in the move there.
I think so. I married up.
Exactly. We went to Holy Infant and watched it with Millie. She was totally taken by it. I gotta say, I didn't care that much. It wasn't that, I mean, it got cloudy for a little bit.
It wasn't cloudy. The moon literally moved in front of the sun.
Well, there's some...
Yeah, I mean, that's good. I mean, I'm not saying it was bad. I decided, like, you know, whatever. I more enjoyed Millie watching the eclipse than, like, watching the eclipse.
I look forward to the universe giving you a customer service survey. See what you thought about the experience.
Yeah, mine probably would be, solid 5, you know. I just didn't... I will say this, though. If by chance Scott Fitzpatrick's listening, if people... that worked for the government, got off work because it was extra cloudy for a few minutes. When you go to cut government, that's probably a place to start. If you could be got off for that, then I don't think the state would miss you if you didn't come back to work, let's say, next July 1st. No?
I would agree with that, and there was definitely not the crowds that people anticipated.
Not at all. Even Ashland was expecting 100,000 people to come in, and I think... Michael, our reporter, went outside the Capitol, and I think he saw about 500, maybe 1,000 people downtown.
Ashland may be a little proud of themselves, you think?
You know, Woody's restaurant can only take, I think, 80 people, so...
Yeah, I gotta say, I didn't really care that much.
I'll say this. I was in Ashland that day, so I didn't see a whole lot of traffic. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah. But, I mean, you know, it happened good. Let's talk about something that is moving. That's the speaker's race. James, you've worked for a long time with Representative Cornejo. It looks like, when you look at the race and you see, it looks like Elijah started out in the front. Representative Rader, Representative Cornejo, probably from behind. It looks to me in the last few weeks you've seen some movement for Representative Cornejo. Is that optics? You never know what's going on inside a caucus race, but is that what it looks like when you guys are talking?
Absolutely. And I think we have three good candidates running. I think what you're seeing are members are paying more attention.
Sure.
Now, you know, a lot of folks went home, taking care of their family. Some are farming. Some are work, catching up on work. And starting to look at, you know, who shares their values, who, you know, the caucus often moves in different directions.
Sure.
Like, you'll have one person, then it's kind of like president. You go for who's the opposite or a different set.
Well, we've seen that. Cather Hanaway to Rod Jetton, very different.
Yes.
To Ron Richard, very different. To Steve Tilley, very different. Tim Jones, a very different ideologically styled person. To John Deal and Todd, you definitely could see very different people.
Yeah, and I, Robert has put tens of thousands of miles on his car. You know, he's met with the vast majority of the caucus, you know, once, if not twice. I think it's good for the caucus that they're out. You have three candidates out talking about their vision, where they want House Republicans to be. It's important because the House has led on conservative issues over the last 15 years. I mean, if you think about House every time...
Easier to do so, though.
It is. I mean that nothing gets said, but yeah. They've led, and so I think the bar is a little higher, and especially with people like Todd Richardson. You know, he has set a good high bar for his conduct and the way he's conducting business, and I think that's causing more people to kind of think a little about it. When they're not used to having that many races. I mean, I think the last race we had was, 2015 with John Beale and Caleb Jones.
And that was an abbreviated race, too. Caleb didn't get in until after session was over. So it wasn't that long until it was wrapped up. So when you're helping a candidate like you are with Rivers and Crayo, if the conventional wisdom is there's a front runner and it's not your guy, how do you handle that? Well, I mean, when you're sitting and doing a strategy session, how do you get around that? Because I mean, I think Senate has a lot of upsets in leadership races. House races, a lot of times the initial front runner wins. What's a strategy that you talk about to move past that?
You're absolutely right. If you go back to 1998, David Klarich was convinced he would be elected minority leader in the Senate, and they chose Steve Aylin. And I think people often give a little more credence to what people outside the buildings say. This is a relationship race that they feel comfortable with. And I think the members, my advice has been, get out, work, sit down, talk to them, listen to them, what are their thoughts, concerns, and kind of know who are the voters you're trying to get. Like, no one member will get 115 Republicans. And your personality means you probably will attract different types of people. Like, when my father-in-law served, you know, I put him in the old guy bucket. And I can say it safely. Okay? They kind of sat together, you know, they weren't really out at Jake Finney's, right? It's a different crowd.
Yeah.
You can put that caucus into three or four different buckets. And so you have to go, well, how do you build that, you know, 58 vote margin to win? And I think that's my advice, has been go find those people and go talk to them.
And so you just have to kind of move past it and say it's not a front-runner thing. It's a, you know, who's the best and that kind of thing.
I think so. And I think when they go one-on-one, it's who do I feel comfortable with? And, you know, caucus this past weekend for the Republicans was they started talking about it. There was apparently a little brouhaha on who could vote, who could not. And it's not unusual for there to be discussion whether or not seniors can vote. I mean, but they have always voted. Or at least, or they've talked about, will seniors vote? But they always have.
I mean, I remember when the designee was created, and it was sort of created to take some responsibility off my former boss, who had ran HRCC and been active back when there was you had to raise the money at $250 at a time, and people didn't just automatically vote Republican. And I don't know that it... Do you think doing the designee race the way they do it serves the caucus well today?
I think it's good to have a designee to allow them a little more time to prepare, to watch, and hopefully begin trying to raise money. Now, whether or not they do that,
you think in this situation it's better served by having a designee selected 13 months out, or having three people running for the office out helping out of their own, you know, personal?
No, I think it's better because, one, with Todd running for auditor, it's good to have another person that can watch, learn, observe. Two, there was a comment, I think Jason Rosenbaum had tweeted from Rod Jetton back in 2007 and talking about wanting the caucus to be focused on one caucus. So I would argue... It's better to have 115 all have a little skin in the game, vote for that person, as opposed to maybe 80, and then have a bunch of freshmen come in and say, hey, why didn't I vote?
So explain it to a very simple hillbilly why the seniors should vote on someone they won't serve under, but members that are getting elected that will serve under them don't get to vote.
I think if you're going to have the election early, your entire caucus should vote. If you choose to postpone the election until after the new, you know, the freshmen come in and the seniors are rotating out after November's election, that would be fine. But I would argue it's better to have one entire caucus buy in, invest in their leader, and rally around that person.
So what is the most important thing that you're hearing from members or that, that Representative Cornejo's hearing as he moves around the caucus? What's their top issue?
You know, I think they're wanting someone that will respect them, that will focus on what are the next issues that we're going to tackle. You know, how are, as a House, will we make sure that we have an equal seat at the table as it relates to with the Senate? And, you know, that's always the position of the House, you know, that they get rolled on something.
That's the fights that go back.
That's right. Forever.
Yeah. Democrats had those fights back in the day, you know.
But, you know, there's not been anything against, you know, it's, I think, all been positive. It's just more personality driven, I think.
Interesting. So, if you had to give a prediction now, where is that race at? How many hard commits do you think you're setting on?
I think it is wide open. I think this goes to a second ballot. I really have, I'd say, 99% belief this goes to a second ballot. And I think in that scenario, Robert's well positioned to succeed.
So, how many votes do you think? Where do you think Robert is right now, assuming seniors vote?
Well, there's, you know, you always have to add about 10% to your factor of people that they say they're with you and then they're not. But I think he's well north of like 45.
Wow.
I think he's in a good spot.
So if he's got 45, where do you think that puts Representative Rader?
I'm not sure. I think she's got some good support from some of the conservative members around the state.
So there's only 117.
That's right.
So let me ask you this. If you're if she shows up with 10 hard commits, do you think she is nominated? Or do you think she bows out? And if there's 10, let's say 15, 20, I mean, if Representative Gray has 45, where do the bulk of those supporters go to on a second ballot?
So I think there's the day that, that the Republicans meet, there's probably 20 that are still kind of undecided in flux. They like maybe your shirt, but they like Ben's tie, and they haven't quite
that's a nice tie.
Made a decision. So there's a herd, and they will move.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason for anyone to get out until after that first ballot has occurred, I think, because they might not be sure. Like if I was Representative Rader or Cornejo, you might think there could be, I've had some really good meetings with you know, these 15 people, I feel that they might come my way. Now, they might not.
So where do you, I mean, right now, if Representative Cornejo is 45, you would assume Representative Rader might be the one that does make a second ballot. Why would her supporters come to Representative Cornejo?
Yeah, that's an influx, to your point. I would say Roberts is a good, consistent conservative. I would say a lot of people that are supporting Holly. If the choice is between Robert and Elijah, you know, Robert's kind of been a thoughtful person, similar temperaments, similar kind of conservative positions where they want to take the caucus. So I think they would probably move, but I can't speak for those people. So, you know, there'll be horse trading and other things that happen over the next couple of weeks.
Coming out of that gate, what would be Representative Cornejo, what's his top issue coming out? If he were to be Speaker, he'll upset that agenda. What does he bring to the table that's his priority?
Well, the growlers are done. I guess, you know, there's a little...
Great public policy, by the way.
That was great.
He should run on that. That's outstanding.
You know, I think he'll have to figure it out. I suspect before people have ideas and after you're elected and you really start to feel the weight of that responsibility on your shoulders, you really start to think more about it. And it's early. I mean, Representative Haar is a great, good conservative. He's a good person. You know, he's in leadership right now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot can happen between now and when Republicans meet to decide.
So, Robert ran once for full leader. I think you learn a lot when you run a race like that. I think you, no matter win or lose, you learn a lot about how those things are, the kind of rhythm and feel to them.
Yep.
That's got to be somewhat of an advantage, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one, he's been around the state already. Two, he's kind of figured out people that said they were with you before and they were, or they said they were with you. Not. You sharpen your skills on how to ask the question.
Yeah.
Here's my example. I remember a fundraising meeting Mike Parson had with a donor that could give $5,000. It was someone who had done it before. They have the meeting. I call Mike, how'd it go? Great. The guy sends $500. I said, hey, did you ask him for $5,000? Well, I asked, would you support me? And so sometimes, you know, so I think by going through, why I say that is, you have to really ask the exact question to have the answer. I think running and losing. Like, I've lost more. I've learned more about my losses, like how to improve what I'm doing, than from my wins.
Okay, let's. If you're listening to this podcast, you love politics. James Harris has done this for so long, he remembers what the minority was like for Republicans. Let's role play. I'm a legislator from West Butler County, and you're running for leadership. Ask me the question.
You know, first you have to have a little chit-chat, get them talking.
I care about hogs, dogs, and logs, and limited DH.
I care about those things. Then you have to move into, this is why I'm running, get a little buy-in for them after you've gained the knowledge of what they're saying. And then you have to go, you know, I would like to have your vote. Can I count on that? And normally they'll say, I'm not ready.
I'll think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
And then what can I do to help move you? And then you have to follow up with them. Because, you know, it's kind of like,
So you do the direct ask.
Yes.
And if they do a sideways move, you ask what you need to do, and you keep
following up. Because some of these members want to know, it's kind of like a girl. You're asking out to a dance. Do you court her? Do you ask her once and follow up to show that you really want to take her to the dance? And I would say this caucus, they want, do you really care about me? Do you really respect me? And that follow up. I'm shocked. Years after years, we'll see people, they'll call them one time, and it'll be 6 months later. Well, you're not really my friend if you didn't call me back for 6 months, are you? You really must not want my vote if you don't call me back for 6 months. And I would, if I was a caucus member and a candidate for speaker was just calling me today, I'd go, why are you just now calling me? Am I like number, 100 on the list? And so you just have to be consistent to build it a personal relationship where they go, I trust you, I like you, we're gonna get along well together.
Let's talk about the Foliage Race for a moment. Somebody I know, you think highly of Rocky Miller. It was an interesting thing. You hear today a lot of, the Missouri House's most vocal critic will bash them for not having jobs and taking vacations and call them third graders. I think it was interesting how you saw Rocky Miller, who is a businessman, who, you know, Republicans are always interesting. They talk about the value of having businessmen in there, but sometimes it's hard when you actually are. He runs Miller Companies. He had his businesses taken off, and he had to focus on that, and he had to step out of that full leader race. I thought that was such an interesting thing because it's so often you hear the people that constantly bash the House and people in the legislature, and these are folks that sign on for a part-time job and have real responsibilities. And if guys like Rocky Miller quit sending their quarterly taxes in, ain't nobody preening and playing politician in Jeff City.
That's right, and people forget we have a part-time legislature. That's a very good point, and they sacrifice their way from their family, their businesses, and those businesses, they lose business when they go. I mean, attorneys do it, business people do it. Rocky's a stand-up person. He's a great person. The one thing I'd say on speaker, the difference between speaker and floor leader, it's often a different set of characteristics that you're wanting.
Well, they're different jobs.
Yes, different jobs. And so sometimes people will assume, well, Representative X was a great floor leader, therefore they'll be a great speaker. Floor leader, you have to be organized, keep the trains running, planning out. Speaker, you have to say yes and no. And you have to be comfortable saying yes and no. And you have to have a big picture. Like John Deal, one thing he was great at, he was moving 20 playing chess in like 5 or 6 dimensions. And so you'd think, well, he wanted this. No, he didn't. And it was like, oh, go ahead and kill it. I don't care. I mean, so he could be very successful in negotiating. And so there's a couple good candidates. I think that race, it's a little more important since Mike Sirpoy is leaving to go to the Senate. Mm-hmm. I think it's probably a little more in flux because I think people have paid more attention on the speaker's race.
I've kind of picked up for the last couple weeks that more of the attention and heat has been going to that race. First of all, let me ask you, the speaker's race is obviously the most important race, but there's been a ton of talk. It's been on for several months now. I see a ton of folks when I talk about that floor leader's race. What does that do to the speaker's race?
I don't think it matters. I think because...
Now, I would think it would help a front runner. If you're the front runner and the attention is drawn off you a little bit, I would think that'd be helpful.
No, I think so, in that sense. But I don't think people will go, well, we're electing a lawmaker from Springfield for speakers, so therefore our floor leader must be from Region X as much. I think it, you know,
speaking of that region, we want to thank the St. Louis Region Regional Chamber for sponsoring the podcast. Very grateful to them.
Great chamber organization.
The work they do. So it kind of was my take when Rocky stepped out. That probably helps Kirk Matthews, maybe marginally, but if there's a, if somebody picks up the majority of his votes, it's probably Kirk Matthews, right? And that's,
I think so.
And they're more similar in style and temperament.
There, that is, and he has carried a lot of big bills and really kind of distinguished himself as someone who learned the process, can carry tough things.
So I have to admit, I was a little surprised that Rob Escobar has done as well as he has.
He, no one will outwork that guy.
And I think that's a big part of it.
I saw his car here yesterday. He was going to see a lawmaker. He is truly a person who puts 110% energy into whatever he's doing. You see it in legislature, and you see it out there. And I suspect he has met with the vast majority of members and talked to them. He's a very personable person. So, like, some people are introverts, and that's really not a good personality to have in public office. Rob, I don't think he's ever met a stranger. He'll call, he'll text, he'll...
It's an interesting thing. You talked about that caucus shifting. You know, Mike Sirpoy is different in age, different in temperament. I've heard some folks say they want more of a... They like Rob's fire. He definitely brings a fire and a vigor to things. And I've heard a few House members say, yeah, we're excited about... We want to see him. And I would ask, well, why are you for? Who are you for? And they would say, well, you know, time to bring it to the Senate. Time to bring it to the governor. I mean, it's interesting to me, there's a lot of younger lawmakers. I mean, they had the best session Republicans have ever had, from what I saw.
Absolutely.
Now, maybe the Senate didn't pass some consent bill for something, but, I mean, if that's what they think is a failure, they're going to spend seven more long years here, right?
Absolutely. I told Republican freshmen all year, just enjoy it. It'll be your best legislative session.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a new governor.
Yep.
You're going to pass big bills.
Big, low-hanging fruit stuff.
And you're not going to be fighting quite yet. Like you see majorities or caucuses when you have more of the same personalities and you move into new or maybe uncharted issues. I think it's a close race. They are different personalities, but they both have strengths. Rob is a great campaigner. He's out there working. Kirk has done a great job handling legislation. I think he seems to be a very organized, disciplined person.
Well, I mean, he's ran a successful business.
Yes.
He's carried big legislation. They're very different. I mean, Rob is more of a campaign type guy, fiery guy. Kirk's more of that legislator that can run, has ran a big company. It, to me, it's been an interesting thing. I think you saw a lot of the young, it's almost, to me, breaks down. Younger legislators are tending to go over to school. Older ones are tending to go, more experienced legislators, not necessarily older in age, tending to go for Matthews. Conventional wisdom would say that Matthews would be the front runner right now, but I don't know. Vescovo has put some work in.
And I would say no one should underestimate Rob Vescovo.
Yeah.
I mean, that guy will work relentlessly.
Yeah, I think he's... It is one common denominator. The people that are not only for Vescovo but are out, you know, publicly asking their other caucus members to be for him too, it's because he's probably seen him three times. And, I mean, that's an admirable thing. To work that hard, that's... if you can't respect that, it's disingenuous. Let's talk about something you know a ton about, and that's the U.S. Senate race.
Yes.
You're the first person that told me about Josh Hawley years ago, that he was going to be outstanding, was looking at running for AG, all his court background. Everything you said about him was exactly spot on. The guy is a wildly talented politician and now has been courted, like a lot of people. I mean, if you had a nickel every time somebody said, yeah, I'm being asked to run for, he actually was being asked to run for, where is he at? And tell me what an exploratory committee difference is between just saying I'm running for Senate.
So I'll begin with Josh. You know, I think both Missouri Republicans learned a lesson after 2012 in the U.S. Senate race where we had a divided primary and we elected, I would say, a freak, but a very flawed candidate.
Probably about right.
And nationally, the Senate...
And he almost won.
He almost
won. He came back at the end. He didn't lose by that much.
But we've also seen the national Republicans that the Democrat playbook has been to play in the Republican primary, have the Republicans nominate a flawed candidate. We saw it in Delaware. We saw it in Nevada with Harry Reid's opponent a couple years ago and win. And so McConnell, the Republicans have said, hey, no, we're going to some of these races matter. In Missouri, on any list, is number one. Mm-hmm. Indiana's high, number two.
I mean, there's enough money that they're going to have all
right. And what Josh, you know, people tease me when I say he's a rock star, but it's so rare to have someone that understands the Constitution, is a good communicator, can talk in a way that's trying to bring people together.
And, I mean, those are clearly things that are true, but to me, it's truly rare you have somebody in state office that understands the connection between Washington and to Missouri. I mean, he understands how to take support from there and turn it into votes here. That is not something that many people ever know, and he seems like he at least knew part of that coming in.
Why do people go into Josh? Because, you know, did amazing in the Republican primary as an outsider. He led the ticket in November. He raised a tremendous amount of money. He was doing a great job as the Attorney General. So I think that kind of brought some of the national people here. And some knew him from his work on the Hobby Lobby case.
Yeah, they came in on the AG race, a lot of them.
Yeah,
he was not an unknown
commodity. Yeah. So you have the importance of the race, you know, great candidate. And so people have been, you know, funny you say that. People were going, oh, Josh wants to run. No, I think he was wanting to be the Attorney General. I think Josh really was excited, and he loves being the Attorney General.
So do you think, though, just from a purely political standpoint, maybe the considering went on a couple months too long?
No.
I think from a purely political standpoint, he would have been more decisive to just come out. Because by the time, early on, it looked like he's truly okay. Fair enough. And I mean, the guy has been a good Attorney General. The snafus of where he's living is odd. But as far as, like, being independent, the people that work for him, compliment him, I mean, to me, that means a lot. If you go find folks that work for Clinton's wife or that know him, you will hear them not just compliment but rave about what a good person he is. Josh Hawley has some of the same, and he's shown independence. He's done a good job as AG by any rational metric, but it seemed to me like as the summer wore on, it was like, okay, if it's this hard for you to decide, come on down.
Well, I don't know if it, you know, couldn't speak to that, but what I can tell you is, you know, 10 years ago, candidates would often wait until maybe December or January of the election year to announce. Mm-hmm. So everyone's, the political pundits, people like you and I, have pushed that clock up. But I don't think normal people out there worry.
Money has pushed that up too, though. The amount of money you have to raise.
It has, but you know, someone I think like Josh Hawley can attract the resources.
Yep.
So he probably has a little more time to decide. And you know, there were other candidates that were probably hoping Josh would not run. But he's a phenomenal candidate.
Why do you explore a committee? What is the practical, to somebody that is familiar with an exploratory committee, what's the difference, though? What's the actual reason you do that instead of an actual committee?
Well, I'd say, you know, if you take the statement from the Attorney General, it's to test the water, see if
it's
why does any candidate
make an exploratory committee as opposed to a regular committee?
It gives them more time to try to figure out without... I mean, if I was a Republican or Democrat, if you're in an exploratory committee phase, you probably don't have to talk about President Trump and a lot of issues as opposed to when you formally declare as a candidate. To figure out, is this right? Is this the right race for you? We've seen many people that have had an exploratory committee back out. I don't believe Josh will do that, but some have.
But that's the rationale for it. You're not totally in. You want to feel it out, and the exploratory committee is different than the actual committee for that reason. But if somebody writes him a $2,500 check or whatever the limit is.
No, it's not like it's the same bucket. You can't go...
Yeah, it's not two different accounts. It's, yeah.
But, you know, the Attorney General office is one of the few offices where they actually have real work to. It's like Secretary of State and the Governor. I mean, you have, you know, hundreds of attorneys around the state, thousands of cases that are moving.
But he has a lot of help with it, right?
Yeah, there's...
I mean, there's a professional
staff
there that helps.
But there's still a lot of decisions that... Ultimately, as the executive of the
office. And it's the first time he's ever done this, too. I mean, when Koster was running for governor, he had done it for 6-7 years. This is an interesting, you know, I could see where that would be. You want to get your office established.
And also, if you go back to Koster, I mean, he worked in the Attorney General's office in 91 or 1992. I remember in 98, his name was talked about as a candidate to run for state office. In 2002, again, I mean, he was kind of a known name and was out there. Where Josh is, you know, he's new, and I think he was genuinely, so it's probably takes a little more time to prepare and figure out if it's the right move.
All right, now the two real questions about this.
Yes,
sir. We always like to have our real questions sponsored by the St. Louis Regional Chamber of Commerce. if President Trump won the state by 19 points, let's say that approval rating is under 50. Let's say it's at 47. Can Josh Hawley win?
Josh Hawley will win.
What if the president's approval rating is at 45?
Probably gets a little closer.
Yeah, well, at what number?
I would say it was...
Koster thought 14 points, I think, was where he probably couldn't win.
Right.
Tenney probably thought he could. What's the number for the president's approval rating that makes this race challenging to win as a Republican?
So if you go back to 2006 when George Bush was very unpopular, I think he was in the around 45-44%. Now, I would say since then, Missouri's become more conservative. In the non-presidential year, the battlefield for Republicans is better. There are fewer Democrat votes. It's friendlier turf.
You think, though, one thing that Trump does do is I think maybe there'll be more city Democrats treat it like a general election out of the...
Well, I think the right to work referendum will help Clara Gaskell. They'll have millions
it's
of
like
dollars to turn out the vote. What Clara Gaskell, I mean, she's good. 34 years, she's been either in public office...
I'm sorry, I love the town halls.
She
I'm a sap, whatever that...
No.
I'm the person she brought that is impressed by that.
She is quick on her feet. She knows the state.
A lot of Missouri.
I would say every county she has people that she has known for decades.
Yeah.
Her problem is if you look at the one race where she was on the defensive in 2004, she choked and lost against Matt Blunt, where Matt Blunt was on the offense. In 2006, she had a friendly environment.
But, I mean, she just knocked off an incumbent governor.
She did.
I mean, it's a... That to me is an outlier of a little bit, isn't it?
Well, I would say yes, but she was out of money and she wasn't able to control the high.
It looked to me like she wrote a wave election in 6 to the Senate.
Yes.
And she capitalized on an anomaly in 12. This time will be, you're right, the race will probably be about her, but you're in the room, right? The whiteboard's out, the whole team, the Hawley team is in the room, and they play the ladder at. What does James Harris say?
Well, whether it's me or the general, Claire McCaskill is the career politician. She's been in office for 34 years or a candidate.
But even as what I consider the biggest and first Josh Hawley supporter in this state and yourself, it does look a little hypocritical to run an ad, well, I guess this time last year, criticizing you were climbing ladders, running from one office to the next, and then 12 months later, that's what you're doing.
I would say no, because the stakes are high. I would say
how does he refute that? I mean, you can.
I would just say, if I was a conservative, I would say the stakes are high. We need someone like Josh Hawley. Claire McCaskill supports higher taxes. She supports.
Can you win a statewide race just with conservatives?
I think in a non-presidential year in this state, you can. And I think Josh Hawley is one of the few people. If I was Claire McCaskill, I think it was your poll or someone had one about a month ago. Josh led in the St. Louis TV market over Claire. That, to me, says that Republicans are typically down like 5-6 points.
Oh, yeah.
At least in the market.
And when they vote, more than that.
Right.
I mean, it's,
but Josh is a good communicator. People are attracted to him. He's done a lot of good things in the office. And if Claire McCaskill
So you rebut that ad with positive things about him and try to move it back to her.
Yes, and
just
how
from
she
a political perspective.
Stamp for the left.
So you just, it's hard to take that issue on and do anything except try to redefine it.
Right. Well, she's the career politician. I would say pot meet kettle. I mean, she's 34 years...
But she didn't run the ad.
No, but I would say she's the politician. She's the one. I think Josh is heeding by the request of people to serve our country. And I think his best service could be in the United States Senate for Missouri. So
it seemed to me that a lot of the asking him to run was, to me, putting bricks in a dam to rebut that ad. Where he can make an honest case that I was asked, it wasn't what I was planning to do, and go from there.
Well, I would say the truth is, you know, truth always helps. The truth is, I'm 99% sure Josh Hawley ran for Attorney General. He really wanted to be the Attorney General and to serve. I do not think he was ever thinking about running for this potential office, and I think you've had months of people asking him, and I would say it's just myself personally, hey, the stakes are high. We need a conservative. Like, I'm ticked off that health care died in the United States Senate. Why? Two or three moderate Republicans. You're always going to have a caucus with a few swing. So you have to build that majority. And Republicans have to get to at least 55, 56. If they want to pass
it. Jim Talent would have been elected in 6. Obamacare in its form wouldn't have passed.
That's right.
One other thing before we let you go, before we get into our five questions. You have been one of the most pro right to work people I've known in my entire professional life. Big day. I remember seeing something cool. It wasn't this year. It was last year, I believe, when they PQ'd it in the Senate. It was you and Tim Drury, and I got to sit on a couch and watch you and Tim Drury look through the circular holes there in the Senate out by Kehoe's office, and got to watch you guys watch something you'd worked on years and years and years come to fruition. It was kind of a cool thing, just from a person who knows both of you and respects you and likes politics, to watch people that have worked for a very long time see that come out. I didn't get to, I wasn't with you when it passed this year, but the Republicans passed it. Labor had a heck of a good day Friday. I mean, that was the optics were impressive. The passion's on their side. It looks to me like, in this current environment, they're set up to where they have a very good chance to pass this thing. What will the campaign for the pro-right-to-work people look like?
So I think what right-to-work is, at the end of the day, you have to come down to a fairness argument to a worker that, you know, should it be your choice or should you be forced to if you're working at factory accidents, union shop. And also, the one thing both labor and I would say the pro-right-to-work people agree, we want more jobs. We want manufacturing in Missouri. We want wages going up. Now, we have a disagreement on whether or not this policy will help that. But I would say the proponents or the people who support right-to-work, we have to go and say this is hurting Missouri as it relates to our border states, when businesses are looking to relocate, and we need this to attract whether it's manufacturing in the future, etc. And I think it's a fairness, and this is needed for better jobs.
To me though, you can work wherever you want. You don't need the government to pass a law for you to work. Hell, you can start your own company if you want to.
Well, you say that, but let's say I'm a young person and I got my welding certificate, and I get offered a job at Boeing. That's a great job. It's going to change my life. I
sure
can have a house. If the question is, well, that's your choice. You know, if you want to work here, you have to join the union or don't work at Boeing. Well, if I'm a young person, I want a good job, so I'm going
it's
to
America.
Work.
Yeah.
Work so I would argue, let the worker have the right to go work at Boeing if they think there's value in the trade. They'll join. Like in the building trades, if you go to Oklahoma and Texas, right to work states, your building trades have done, they've become almost more of like a job training, certification. Mm-hmm. People join, they volunteer, they want to be in that union for work. Because you'll have a lot of large contractors who go, I want 100 people on site, make sure they're certified, you know, they're here at 7 a.m., they know how to work. So I think you'll see.
I do think sometimes labor overestimates the negative effect it'll have on union homes. Because I do think that our unions themselves, because I do think there is it is funny. Like, I think in West Butler County, nobody knows their UPS driver's a Teamster. They have no idea. I grew up, till I came to the Capitol, I didn't really know what a union was, because I'd never seen a strike. But in the cities, the labor unions finance projects, and the training is a different thing. I do think sometimes they may get a catastrophe, maybe more so than it is for some of the good they do. But can this right to work thing overshadow the U.S. Senate race?
No, because the U.S. Senate race is so important. We'll see $80 or $90 million being spent in the state, which that actually probably makes the job of unions a little more challenging, because the issue rates will be through the roof, because you'll have so many groups buying television ads, pushing those rates up. And so, you know, I think people have to be smart.
You never hear a television station manager complain about 501(c)s, anything. So, you know.
No, that's right. And I remember in 2004 in Cape Girardeau, they ran out of TV commercial space, so they added an extra commercial block in the 10 o'clock news to fit a few. They'll make a little money.
Yeah, I mean, you say what you want, it's a business.
That's right.
So give me the prediction. Right now, do you think people outstate know what a right to work is?
I think.
Give me the percentage of people that have any kind of knowledge, pro or con.
Pro or con, it's probably about 30-40% of awareness.
So is part of the pro right to work campaign an education campaign?
Yes.
And explaining what that is and why it matters to you, something you probably don't know anything about.
Yes, and making sure that people know about the fairness. You know, should you, the reason it will pass or be upheld, do you think you should have to join a union just to get a job? And voters will say yes or no. The other side will have a different argument.
Today, our friend Tim Drury, should he be legitimately worried that at the ballot box, labor wins? I mean, this looks to me like a close fight. You could make an argument for either side.
It'll be an aggressive fight. It'll be very expensive. High coin toss. One thing is, you know, Ohio...
Will the money on the business side be there? And what does that money look like?
I mean, look, labor has a tremendous amount of money.
Well, let me just ask you, are you working for a group now on this?
I'm working for a group that supports Right to Work.
So they're already out.
People are out. Yes, but labor will have millions. They've had a lot of losses, so I think they're going to draw a line.
I think the best they organized labor's had in the state of Missouri in, I don't know, 6-7 years, maybe since Obama was elected, was Friday. Yep. I mean, I think it felt good for a lot of those guys that they had a good day.
And you have to take note, in Ohio, a lot of John Kasich's collective bargaining reforms back in, let's say, 2011 were all stopped at the ballot box.
And I think it's the same chat trick, right? It's a legislator veto. They're vetoing what the legislature did, they're trying to run a similar thing to Ohio, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, but the difference here is the union membership and retirees is substantially lower as it relates to the whole in Missouri as opposed to Ohio. Yeah.
I think whoever spends the early money to define what Right to Work is to people that have no idea.
And you know, if you go into outstate Missouri, if the message is on Right to Work side, we want jobs and factories here. Guess what? Folks want to work. They don't care about the union. Is kind of like, once you have a job, you worry about that. Because if you don't have a job, you want a job.
Yep. No, I get that. I always thought that was President Trump's biggest problem, is like month 30 when their jobs aren't there. You know, if they're not there,
that's right.
At some point, you acted like, well, everybody should be able to steamroll everyone else and bring jobs. Where are the jobs?
That's right.
Last question before we get into our final segment. How long in that same vein? So there was a special session in June. The legislature was told to come back from their vacation and work. That's passed. I've not heard anything about that. How long until people start asking DED, the governor's office, Representative Roan, where's the factory? And where have you heard anything? Do you know where that is?
Well, you know, the governor had a big Smith & Wesson announcement, I want to say, in February. I think the governor has been aggressively outgoing to different businesses trying to get leads on.
This special session ended in June. It's the end of August. Kids are back in school. When do you...
Well, factories don't pick up and move every day. I mean, think about it. That's a tremendous expense. You know, many
factories... How many months, though, from when you put on your Facebook page, hundreds of jobs coming, how many months until people start to wonder, hey, where are the hundreds of jobs? We ain't seeing.
Well, the good thing is, I think it's within a year or so people start getting impatient. Okay. But I think people are feeling better. Wages are slowly starting to move up.
So something like that. You think you have 12 months and people say, hey, this is a big thing. It's hard to do. We haven't heard anything, so you give them a year.
And I would say to Trump and Brighton's the good thing is just, you can tell that the stock market's doing well, but more importantly, wages are going up, and you're seeing, like, AT&T announced today they're hiring 300 in the state.
Ameren's adding another 50 here in Jeff City.
Yeah, unemployment's down.
And so you can tell a lot of it's just people feeling, okay, they're pull back on taxes, regulations, so I can make some
investments. Now, see, if I was four beers in, I would ask James why unemployment's down, because we're not a Right to Work state. But we want to ask him tougher questions, and so we always ask Becky Lohman our normal. You kind of took a bad week on with me. Becky's far better at an entertaining listen on the podcast. She comes up with five questions. Uh-oh. I think she set them to Rachel for James.
Uh-oh. You know what? I think Becky and I almost every week we go through the entire internet and come up with all these different getting to know you questions. And so we have like a master list that we compile from, and she actually scratches off questions as we go through guests. So your first question, James, what did you want to be when you grew up?
An astronaut.
Really? Why?
I thought it was cool. I went to space camp once. I fell in love, put a little helmet on, and I thought, this is awesome. And I got a little jacket. I bet my parents still have my little space jacket.
Did you get to go to all the astronaut events on Monday here in Jeff?
No, because we went the kids over too late, so that's a sore thumb. I was using the kids to get in so I could see the stuff.
Now, when I met James, the group of people that were getting involved in politics at the Millennium, I was the Jeff of his governor. if you'd have picked a person out of that crew, and he ended up in politics, so that's similar. But I remember back in the day, you dressed like the governor of then. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Second question. Do you have any pets?
I do. 3 golden retrievers.
Yes.
A 12-year-old gypsy, and then my wife and I were convinced she would die and we wouldn't know what to do, so we have 2 pups that are about 2 now.
Wow.
Sugar Cookie. And I'm the official dog feeder walker. But they think I'm the jester. They listen to my wife. They don't listen to me.
You see, big, tough Republican strategist, long time leader,
Sugar and
watch Sugar and Cookie melting down.
If you had a walkout song, what would it be?
See, this was my weakness. I'm not that good. I'm horrible with songs. Names of songs.
Well, you can always sing it to us. That's fine. That's
no, fine. Just no. If you ask anyone, they'll say I'm the worst person. I listen to 90s music. So.
Yeah, like Born in the USA?
Is that a problem?
That's what I would think.
Okay, I'll take that.
Go Born in the USA.
What is your favorite TV show?
Let the Eagle Soar. Damn, you should have went there.
Oh,
that would have been the one.
Missed opportunity.
Let the Eagle Soar. It used to be Alias, so back that was like 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If you remember, I love that. And then Grey's Anatomy. I loved Grey's Anatomy.
Is that still on TV?
I think it is, but you know, after Dr. McDreamy left, it was no good.
So. Okay.
That first season was legitimately good TV. And I'm a heterosexual man saying that the second season was good. I kind of, it got a little nutty. You know, after that. But that first season was good TV.
Something's going on here, and I'm not sure how to feel about it.
It's not a bad show.
Between the 3 children and 3 dogs, it's normally maybe a half hour of Fox News before I fall asleep. Because they have the remotes. Like, if you look at the amount of time that Disney Junior is on in our house, you know, it's the Fox News for a few minutes.
Huh. Last question.
Yes.
What do you hope your legacy is?
They'll make policy better. I'll be a good husband, a good dad, those two we wanted to, and have made some big changes. Like my town, I grew up in Franklin County. And when I was little, good jobs were people that got in vans every morning about 4 a.m. and they went to Cameron, they went to Ford, Chrysler. Those were the good jobs. And a lot of those have left.
Yeah.
And I'm hopeful that we will make policies that will make them work. Normal folks can have that. Because I think the foundation of society, you have to believe in God, but men, we have to have jobs and so they can provide for their families and have a good quality of life.
Let me ask you a question. All politics and public policy aside, even under the best public policy conditions, do you think jobs like that, Chrysler plant, do you think there is public policy that can bring them back here?
I think so, because here's why. When I've been in Mongolia, I'll give 2 examples. They buy.
You're the only person on this podcast starts a sentence about
Caterpillar equipment. And one day I started talking with the mining executive from Ivanhoe. I said, why? And he said, you know, the Chinese steel was not as good, and the engines and the Russian equipment. He said, the American, it's the best. One day I landed in Tanzania. We're at the airport for a few minutes on the plane. I counted 5 different Boeing 737s, different country. You know, we make the best stuff. We have the best workers. Often for your emerging, you know, economies, can they afford? That's why when people attack the Ex-Im Bank, I said, no, it's a good thing because it allows people to buy our stuff as opposed to crap from the Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, yes, there's a place for us to continue to lead on growing or sort of economy changes. I think at the end of the day, for a country to be strong, you have to make things. It might change what those things are. We make a lot of things for the best now. Some things really change in society or your economy and go away. And, you know, I always find it ironical that union or just people in general go to Walmart and buy all the Chinese made crap because it's a little bit cheaper. And
Walmart. There's nothing about Walmart that appeals to me.
It's a scary place. It's good though, people watch you.
Try coming to Poplar Bluff. I mean, it is. Yeah, we call it the mall in Poplar Bluff, but it
probably is.
It is.
That Orshel's, you can't get to those 2 stores.
I go to Orshel's a lot, but now Walmart is. Oh man, it is. There's just nothing good about Walmart.
I recently learned you can buy groceries at Menards, and it kind of made my day.
You can?
Yeah, they have like freezer cases. They have a grocery section.
Well, Schnucks delivers now, which has changed.
Yeah, they
the
do.
Whole
IB
lot for me.
Delivers now.
Nice. Yeah,
$100 will deliver.
Yeah, I find myself having to add extra stuff to get to the free delivery thing. I probably buy $20 of extra stuff to get a $5 free delivery.
Could you buy another bottle of liquor too?
Well, I
you never run out.
Will they sell it to you?
No.
Yeah, I can't get
really?
Them to. I've tried.
No liquor, no tobacco. I tried to.
See, that is the problem. The type of public policy we need to change.
Let the eagle soar, by God.
Be able to deliver liquor.
Let the gray eagle soar. Is that it?
That's it.
All right, I got a question. Give me a prediction on how many at the end of the day, final tally, how many votes of Representative Cornet will end up with?
I'm not in the caucus.
Well, what do you need? You need,
like, I thought
58 to win.
You need 58 to win. So I bet ultimately on a second ballot, if things go right, Roberts north of 60.
Yeah, for him to win, it's going to be very close, right? And that probably was something you thought of.
You've got three good people at the end of the day. Elijah's a good person. He's charismatic. He's in leadership. A lot of caucus members defer to that.
And Holly Rader has a heck of a legislative
She
resume.
Is a great conservative. Yeah. She's a hard worker.
And that legislative resume is legitimate. I mean,
yes.
she's passed some major bills.
Yes.
Well, at the end of the day, what's Josh Hawley get in U.S. Senate?
I think he defeats Claire by 5-6 point range. I suspect he will do as good of a job as maybe a Rob Portman or in Burr in North Carolina, where they were able to put the race to bed by end of September,
wow.
And the Democrats and Republicans moved. And I think Josh Hall is that type of person.
Well, they'll cut their income at least.
I think the Republicans will lose. And if the Democrats are in a defensive position, like Josh,
but I mean, the Democrats would cut an incumbent member loose.
It's expensive here. If they're moved into a defensive posture, Indiana's cheaper for them. The dollar
that would be going against history, though, to.
Well, they should have plenty of money. But
I mean, it would be going against history to say that they'd be in a defensive posture with a Republican president.
No, but if you look at the battlefield, like for Republicans, there's no way the Republicans, unless they shoot themselves in the foot, and we always do as Republicans, so I'll give that caveat. But the states are so friendly. Missouri, West Virginia, Indiana, Montana, North Dakota. These are great Republican states. Donald Trump did well. So I think, and Josh Hawley is here every day of the week. Claire McCaskill has to get on a plane, go back to Washington. You know, people, as I listen, they're not happy. They're pissed off, and they're blaming Congress. They don't understand, hey, why didn't you cut my taxes? Why haven't you done this? Why can you still take August off and go on these junkets around the world that you and I paid for? Like, Congress is not doing their job. And the advantage at the end of the day is Josh Hawley's not part of that swamp. Claire McCaskill is. And I suspect Missouri voters
well, that's
will
a,
be
I mean, that's a,
will
can,
be
can he say it like that?
Wow, the people are sure someone will.
Yeah. No, that I mean, that's a very compelling narrative, and we hope that you'll...
Wait, can we have to come back to the TV show, by the way? What the heck? It's you have to get up early.
Well, you
big city.
Here,
rush
come
hour
over for a Cardinal game, and come before. We invite James here on a lot, and he has other TV shows he's doing, I think, other commitments. Or maybe it's Ginger and Cookie.
Sugar and Cookie.
Sugar and Cookie. I have to let them out, feed them, walk them, and then hope they don't run away. Not listen to me and like run the neighbor's yard.
Well, I gotta say, I always enjoy getting to visit with you, and I enjoy getting
Thank
to visit
you.
With you on the podcast. People, it's always funny. I see folks make certain statements, or they think it's always been this way for Republicans. It has not always been the way it has been for Republicans. There was a time when it was just as hard on Republicans as it is Democrats, and James is the person to help bring that change and that switcheroo, so it's always good to have you on. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
We will see you next week on the Hashtag MoEdge Podcast. I want to thank the San Luis Regional Chamber of Commerce for their support of the podcast, and we'll see you next week.